Good morning, Oregon. Thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, and I'm bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Every weekday except Thursday, that is, and of course today is Thursday, and we have a Thursday special queued up for you. Today we're going to go back to the good old days, which, if you happen to have been in Portland, and specifically in the north end of Portland, weren't really so good, but they certainly were colorful. Specifically, this is an article from the Portland Evening Telegram, published on December 23rd, 1892. The headline?
Demoralizing the Boys!
Before I get started on this, though, I probably ought to tell you that full details about OffbeatOregon.com and about the Offbeat Oregon History podcast can be found at our website, which is, of course, OffbeatOregon.com. So go check that out if you get a chance to. But first, sit back and relax, and let me tell you why the moral fiber and fabric of society are being torn asunder by these shocking, horrible, depraved variety theater people. Before I launch into this, I should probably explain what a variety theater was. Variety theater was basically vaudeville. Vaudeville was a more respectable variety of variety theater. Generally, in a frontier 1890s variety theater, the goal of the evening was to sell lots and lots of liquor to the people who came to watch the show, and to enhance those liquor sales by having the actresses go up and kind of vamp the spectators, asking them to, you know, buy them a bottle of champagne or share a glass of wine, which the variety theater actress would discreetly pour into a spittoon because you can't fleece the suckers when you're drunk, right? And the visitors would get progressively drunker and drunker and poorer and poorer, and at a certain point they would either become too drunk to continue functioning or too poor to continue hanging out there, at which point they would be unceremoniously deposited into the street to go earn some more money and come back and do it again. These theaters were wildly unpopular with the quote-unquote respectable people of the community, Portland or wherever. There actually was a school of thought that the, as they called them, bawdy houses, the whorehouses, the places where you would go to purchase a little action if you were an Edwardian male, served a societal function that the variety theaters did not, and the variety theaters had the disadvantage of enticing the young into sin and perdition. There were actually people who were pro-whorehouse but anti-variety theater because they saw the variety theater as temptation and they saw the whorehouse as something that was just going to be there anyway and there was nothing they could do about it. It's also worth noting that the first chief of police of Portland actually ran a variety theater. It was a kind of an early version of a variety theater called the Orofino Hall. So that's the social context for our story today. Headline:
Demoralizing the Boys. Minors are allowed to visit the city variety theaters. The law openly violated.
Minors not allowed, reads a placard posted conspicuously near the door of every variety theater in this city. Minors not allowed is the purport of a city ordinance regulating theaters where intoxicating liquors are sold. But minors are, however, allowed. They are admitted to nearly every variety theater in this city. It may be that one or perhaps two of these theaters are making a pretense of obeying the law, but the others are openly violating it, and boys of 15 years of age and even younger are allowed to enter these places without question.
To the editor, I have noticed in the columns of the Telegram recently several references to the work of the License Committee of the Council relative to the variety theaters, so-called, of this city, and, being a father, am naturally interested in the subject. Now let me ask a few questions right here that some of the, quote, gentlemen who conduct these pitfalls may be able to answer through their, quote, brainy representatives they have in our city councilmen. I do not mean to class all the variety theaters in Portland in the same category, as there may be one or two among them that are conducted according to the city ordinance governing such business. The others do more to breed vice in all its forms than any other cause I can name. The questions are, what revenue does the city derive from the so-called variety theaters? True, they pay a retail liquor license, but don't all saloons pay that? Do they pay anything extra for enticing men and boys into boxes there to be plied with vile liquor by a lot of brazen harlots called song and dance artists, and they're robbed? The price they charge for their vile alcoholic stuff is 25 cents per drink, when first-class saloons only charge 10 cents and 12 and a half cents for good liquors, as such beverages go. Then why not license them accordingly? $1,200 a year would not be felt by them as much as $400 is to ordinary saloon keepers. How many heinous crimes can be traced direct to these variety theaters? How many boys and young men take their first downward step while crazed by the liquor dealt out by these leeches? How many unmentionable acts are done while their perpetrators are under the spell of passions awakened by scenes witnessed on the stages of these places, in which scantily attired males and females participate? To look at the proposition without knowing the above facts, $1,200 license looks exorbitant, but is little enough. If such a license as proposed was in effect, only one house probably would be able to run, and the police would have no difficulty in restricting them. The $1,200 license is low enough. I would say banish them all from the city. I would suggest, however, to try the high license as an experiment. Tacoma charges a license of $1,500 per annum, and it has been found to work excellently. Respectfully submitted, A Parent. A Telegram reporter paid a visit to each of the four vaudeville theaters in the city where liquors are sold for the purpose of ascertaining the truth or falsity of the charges made against these theaters. Their performances were not without merit. Indeed, some of their stage attractions would not be out of place in any first-class playhouse, and are possessed of considerable worth, while others, however, are of grossly vulgar and disgusting character. During the earlier part of the evening, the performance is usually of an order far superior morally to that coming later on, growing gradually more and more vulgar as the night progresses, until frequently its depravity becomes positively nauseating to a mind in its normal condition. In one of the theaters, the evening entertainment commenced with a comedy, said to be laughable, entitled A Night's Frolic. Then a clever little song and dance artiste, who was announced as the popular favorite, made her appearance. She smiled insinuatingly at the boys in the boxes as she tripped gaily across the stage and commenced to sing. The reporter deadened his ears. Then she received an encore from the beer waiters engaged in the house and from the other actresses who were distributed in the different boxes, and returning went through a muscular performance, which the reporter was informed by one of the three or four girls who had gathered around him and were pleading with him to buy them a bottle of beer, was a dance. Then came a clever team, if the statement made in the program may be taken as true. It was, quote, positively their first appearance in the city in their original specialty. Quote, a realistic picture of Irish life and its eccentricities, in which they sing, dance, and do many funny capers, which was in reality a grossly impure and disgusting exaggeration of Irish character. At its close, a charming serio-comic made her first appearance in new and pleasing specialties. Had it been her last appearance, her audience would doubtless have been more appreciative. Later, the, quote, human salamander did a, quote, new and original magician turn, which was not a bad piece of work. Then, a clever vocalist and dancer delighted that portion of the audience that had been buying beer for her in one of the boxes. After responding to an encore from the usual source, in which her intoxicated friends in the box joined lustily, the, quote, charming little songster hied herself off to work the suckers some more, and was supplanted by a gentleman who, in the program stated, stood at the head of the procession in his own peculiar and original style of entertainment. Quote, he will compose and sing verses upon any subject which the audience may suggest. Don't be afraid of getting a shot or a send-off, said the program. After the gentleman had become tired of composing and singing verses, Old Auntie, a very funny comedy for which the audience had been asked to wait, was put on. Then, quote, the acrobatic marvels made their appearance in ground and lofty tumbling, introducing twisters and a half, and all the latest tricks in tumbling. They did some very clever turns, and the entertainment concluded with a, quote, laughable comedy, quote, characters by the company, after the work of another, quote, clever vocalist, and a few other, quote, specialty people had been sandwiched in. In two of these theaters, the reporter saw boys whose appearance showed that they were minors beyond question. In one of the other two, he spotted two or three boys who, if they had attained their majority, looked exceedingly young for their age, though they all claimed to have passed their 21st birthday. Disgusting scenes! Intoxicated men occupied the boxes of the several theaters, surrounded by women, some of them dressed in tights and wearing short skirts, sitting perhaps on the knee of the man or boy in the box with their arms entwining his neck, begging for a drink. Many of the women were more or less under the influence of liquor, and coarse laughter and ribald language escaped their lips in the latter part of the evening. The man without money will hardly be noticed by the girls after the fact that he is broke has been developed, though he may have spent several dollars before reaching that financial condition. Some of the girls engaged in the variety business perhaps regret the necessity under which they are placed of endeavoring to induce the men who enter the den to give all their money to the house for vile liquor at exorbitant prices before they go out. It is not unusual for clerks or laboring men to spend an entire week's salary or more in one of these dives and receive nothing in return but a few drinks of very poor quality, and associations that would be repugnant to many of them when sober.
That's probably enough of that for now. This little blast from the past brought to you from the almost Christmas time edition of the Portland Evening Telegram in 1892. If you're listening for the first time and want more information about Offbeat Oregon history, if you're listening for the first time, you might want to know what Offbeat Oregon history actually is. This is a Thursday special, so it's a little bit unusual, and it's kind of an experimental thing. Do let me know what you think of it, so that I know if I should be looking for more kind of good stuff from the back issues of the Portland Evening Telegram and other hard-to-find newspapers. It's kind of nice. I have access to most of that stuff through the library at the University of Oregon. Some of it is digitized, and you can find it at your local library. The Portland Morning Oregonian is like that. But other smaller papers like the Telegram, not so much. The Telegram is my favorite. It's very rabble-rousy. So if you'd like more info about Offbeat Oregon history, you can get it all at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. The complete catalog of about 190 columns going back to 2008, plus links out to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and to the Facebook page and Twitter feed. Our theme music is a track titled Old Man's Waltz by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, written by Carmen Ficarra. All Offbeat Oregon podcasts are covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. However, this one is composed primarily of me reading a public domain document into the microphone, which is not a sufficiently transformative act to assert a fresh copyright on it, which would be necessary if I were going to license that copyright under a Creative Commons license, and therefore, I'm just going to put this entire podcast into the public domain. Coming to Corvallis? Drop me a line and let's grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. That's it for today. Coming attractions. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about something else, specifically some great stories of jailbreaks from the Oregon State Penitentiary in the first decade or two of the 20th century, when the place was a really awful spot and the security was sufficiently porous that people were getting out of there at a rate of one or two a month. Some of them made it out for a while, and they discovered that the safecrackers were the hardest ones to keep hold of. This article includes a story that seems like it's straight out of the Shawshank Redemption, a couple of guys that actually tunneled out of the Oregon State Pen. Didn't take them as long as it took Andy Dufresne to get out, though. So look for that after about 6 a.m. tomorrow, and in the meantime, why, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff, will ya? Bye now.